Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another ESPN podcast, the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. Spring training is here, and three times a week, Buster and company will get you ready for the new season by talking to players, managers, front office executives, and regulars like Tim Kirkjian, Jeff Passan, and Sarah Langs. That's the Baseball Tonight podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week. We have a guest join us. You can check him out on Around the Horn. You can check him out on Debatable. You can also check him out at Anscape. And he is the author of The Movement Made Us. David Dennis, what's going on?
Nothing much, brother. Glad to be here. Glad to hang out with you and all that good stuff.
Appreciate it, man. Hope you don't mind that I dropped the junior. I'll be doing that.
You said you don't believe in the junior.
I believe in the junior if you and your daddy are in the same room.
Okay. All right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. But with you, it's a little bit different because your daddy got a little clout, got a little something.
I know. He got a little something to it. Yeah,
there's a little something there. I'm talking about these other dudes where I don't even know if you know your daddy. And you out here talking about junior. I'm like, bro, don't nobody need that. And you know whose fault it is? Nobody talks about this. It's Robert Griffin. Robert Griffin started this entire thing where he became Robert Griffin III. And I know it sounds classy, you know, but you will go back. You will never find me call him Robert Griffin III. He is Robert Griffin because I don't know your daddy. I ain't never thought about your daddy one time.
Yeah, I need to know the second and the first. See, the thing, I had to add the junior because, like, folks were running up on my daddy, especially, like, a few of the people in his circle, some of the philosophical people who have some differences about what the things I wrote.
Yeah.
Running up on him at the events.
Yeah.
Not speaking to him at the events. He's had a couple of things canceled because they were like, David Dennis was wilding in that article. So I had to put the junior on there to save him a little bit.
Yeah, so. You know what? See, that's what I'm saying. With you, I know they not going to run up on your daddy coming over here. You know what I'm saying? But that makes perfect sense. I'll say this, though. The junior... Okay, I can kind of get it, right? People show a love to pops or whatever. I actually think a lot of people just want to sound more classy. But it's the senior that I really don't get. That's the one. That ain't even your name. It's not how that works.
One of the Morris brothers added the senior at the couple years ago.
He did. A few of those guys. And I feel like almost honestly with the junior, if you want me to call you junior, start going by junior. That's you, Junior Dennis. You know what I'm saying? Like, we ain't gonna have no problem if you go by if the junior that important, bring it to the front. Don't make your daddy a footnote. Let him know on the way in.
We're junior out the gate.
All right, now let me ask you this. You grew up in Mississippi, right?
Yeah.
You from Jackson.
From Jackson, yeah.
Okay.
Jaffrica. Jacktown.
Yo, so my question about what people call Jackson Jaffrica, did y'all come up with that or did they come up with
it? That's crooked letters. That's crooked letters.
Oh,
that's,
they came up with that.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. That's, we credit the crooked letters to that. It's Kamikaze David Banner. We credit them with Jaffrica. You know, actually, I've never heard a white person say Jaffrica. Now, maybe they say that in Pearl. Maybe they say that in Ridgeland. But I ain't never heard
of it. Look, I will tell you a story. I've told it all here before, but my mama had a secretary, nice white lady, and my mother had to, shall we say, come up with a repair solution that one might deem to be a bit unorthodox.
Okay.
And my mother is with her secretary, and she says, well, you know, black people, we have a word for that. To which her secretary said, yeah, we use it too. Which is to say, they might be calling it Jaffrica.
Yeah,
y'all not there.
Right. That might, Jaffrica might be whispered in the burbs.
Yeah. So, you know. Now, I was asking because I wasn't sure if you was from that that Mississippi that is closer to Memphis. And I've kind of talked about the Jai thing up and down. I've talked about it to a degree in the context of like Memphis as place you don't want to play around, right? But a context I thought you might have some interest in is I loved this team last year and I really don't like it anymore. Like I think I mean I don't know if I'm just becoming an old man or whatever it is. But I love the spirit of that team. Like, I love everything about the Grizzlies. Like, if I was in a place where I got a favorite team anymore, that would be my favorite team. Because I look at the teams that they had, like, 10 years ago, right? Like, the Zeebo teams. And then look at it now, the personality is fairly consistent. And it's a personality that I feel like is consistent with a very unique American city. And I just kind of love how that all goes down. And then they just seem to turn into a bunch of assholes.
Right.
Like, it all it all went and shook out. And I was trying to think with Ja, and I recognize that, like, how much strangers like you only matters, but so much. But assuming he now is going to realize not to be out here rolling the dice on your life, it is kind of wild to me to look at how much goodwill that whole team squandered in 1 year. It normally takes longer than 1 year.
Yeah, like, I mean, the thing that Ja has to understand, which is, like, I think people, Memphis, these type of cities, like, guns are not a deterrent in these places. You know what I'm saying? Like, artillery is not a deterrent. Artillery is reconnaissance. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is just letting me know what I need to do to get what I need to be done, get done. And that's the case in Memphis, case in Jackson, a lot of these cities. And, like, you're not scaring nobody with that. You know, like, you have a city where one of the most beloved celebrities and rappers was gunned down while buying cookies.
Hold up. Be careful saying that. Did you see what they tried to do with me about that the other day?
No, I did not see that. Uh-uh.
So I made that point, right? Mm. They're like, look, you out here playing around. They got Dolph outside the cookie shop, right? Mm. And my point was yours. This is one of the most beloved figures in the city. But it's one person that had a problem, and that's all it takes, right? Right. I look up, and it's some post. Bomani Jones says, Ja Morant could end up like, or I saw one that said is asking for it, like Young Dolph. Okay, end up like Young Dolph. You want to guess who made that post? DJ Vlad.
Oh, come on now.
So you know what happened next? TMZ picked it up.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I'm like, what is so hard to understand? Like, what is controversial about this statement?
If DJ Vlad has your information, that means you're now part in the CIA registry. But that's a whole different story.
I didn't know people were saying that in public. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, you know, I think I'm good as long as I don't go on there and talk to him.
Right. Yeah. I think there's absolutely wires attached to the chairs. But anyway, I mean, it's just like, the point of showing these things, showing these weapons and all that stuff is not doing what you think is going to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just a thing that invites, it doesn't matter how beloved you are. Like you said, it doesn't matter how beloved you are in a city on the macro level, but it just takes somebody to understand, you know, who wants to test you, who wants to press you. And I think that that was, like, the scary part of it. But in terms of the Grizzlies overall and what sort of has soured us about that as the Ja, but also, like, if Ja's Busta Rhymes, Dylan Brooks is Spliff Star of the, like, why we you know, despise this Grizzlies team. Like, he is, like, on in the ad libs doing all this other stuff that makes us not like the Grizzlies at all. And put those two together and this idea of, like, Steven Adams is what's keeping, like, is what's going to hold y'all together. Like, we're losing because Steven Adams ain't there. It's just so much stuff together with a team that has not actually won anything. And usually social media turns us on somebody just for no reason, but they've done so much to turn us on what would have been, like, probably the beloved team this season.
You know what Dylan Brooks is? Like, were you a No Limit guy?
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't a No Limit
guy.
I had guys in No Limit that I liked. They were, for lack of a better term, though, what most would consider to be, like, lower tier, right?
Uh-huh.
Fiend, Mac, Servon, you know, like those cats, right? But, like, if you are a No Limit guy, Dylan Brooks is kind of like y'all Silk the Shocker.
I knew that's what you were going to say.
And what I mean by that is he's kind of whack.
Right.
In the case of Silk the Shocker, he was undeniably whack, right? He was trying this whole avant-garde thing. Where he would listen to one beat but actually be rapping over another.
Yeah.
I don't think he was actually doing that, but it sounded like it. But
I don't think they turned his headphones on in the studio. I think he was just going off of memory of what he thought the beat sounded like. Yes. He was just rapping.
You know what? You really hit me what he was doing, and it dawned on me because I know people who do this. He'd do that right without the beat, right? Yeah, and then when he gets to the beat, he ain't quite there.
Right. He's like, we're just gonna make a fit. Right.
Yeah, he wrote before he got beat. But he served a value to the crew. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, he provided something. There's a reason why he's there. He just wasn't good at rap.
Right.
Dylan Brooks is like a sub 40% shooter, which is something that does not happen in the modern era of the NBA. He fouls too much. You talk about a dude that be rapping but not on the beat. That's Dylan Brooks, really, on defense, right? Mm-hmm. Always fouling somebody. He doesn't do it as much as he did before. All of that. And it's like, yo, make him say, that's the jam. Here comes Silk.
Right.
Here he go.
Messing it up.
Yeah.
And all we need, we would have been fine with Mia X and Fiend.
Yes.
And, you know, everybody, but you up in here messing up. We got to wait 50 seconds for you to get your 16 bars out the way when we just want to see Mia X dunk on somebody.
Yes.
You know?
But that's him. He's there. And then the rest of the guys just, like, the Shannon Sharp thing, which will kind of live in infamy. Was it Desmond Bane or Brandon Clark that was the other guy that got into it with Shannon Sharp? Because I ain't going to lie, them Grizzlies be running together.
Yeah, it might have been Clark. Well, I don't know if Desmond Bane was in the – yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, they all be running together. But it was just all of it. It was like, yo, I'm not old enough to be looking at a team like that. Like, y'all need to grow up. Except I am.
Right,
I am now old enough where they need to grow up. But
and it's also just a function of the games they're losing. You say, nobody in the West scares me. Then just, like, beat the Warriors by 40 points on Christmas Day. Like, how much is that to ask? I think Steph didn't play, Wiggins didn't play, they got nobody. Go on national TV and beat them by 50 points and then say, I'm not scared of nobody in the West. You know?
Yeah.
Like, win the games, too. That's part of it.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Ja, and, we, you know, like I say, I think I've talked the gun thing to death, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the report that Steven Adams, they had the team meeting, and Steven Adams has to be the leader guy, right? Because honestly, that's the function that he should serve, which is interesting because he ain't just white. He ain't even from here. You know what I'm saying? But he does have a goal too. So, you know, that connotes a measure of authority. And he was just on the like, hey, man, we are terrible on the road.
Mm.
We need to do better. We need to take care of ourselves better when we on the road. And apparently Ja Morant was like, yeah, whatever, dog. And then went out there and was kicking it however you kick it. And I look at NBA teams and how many of them go super duper young.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta have some grown-ups in the room, right?
Yeah.
Like, no matter what, you gotta have some grown-ups in the room there to just be like, hey, man, let me highlight you. Like, whenever we talk to, like, younger guys who came in the league, like, super young or whatever, they're the ones that talk about, like, nah, this is the one that was like, yo, this is what you got to eat. This is what you got to do. This is how you got to do it. Those stories go one way. Now, there's a second way the story can go that I hadn't thought about until we talked to J.R. Smith on Game Theory on Friday. And J.R. was talking about his thing with the grown-ups on his team was at every turn, they were making it clear that he wasn't one of them. And he felt like more like he was getting hazed, right? Like, yo, go pick up my stuff. Go do this. Go do that. All of that stuff. Like David West, who was a rookie on the same team the year before, would talk about how Stacey Augmon would have him go deposit checks at the bank for him. You know, stuff like that. But you got to have somebody that gets a hold of you early, because otherwise you just getting $1 zillion in your pocket and you roll around, you know, all these places. It's too late after a certain point for anybody to tell you anything.
And the irony of this is that this became a big story last season and then the playoffs of like, oh, yeah, we got rid of, you know, Iguodala didn't want to be here. Maybe you should have got another Iguodala to replace him to be in that locker room, because that seems like the kind of guy you might have been missing.
You need more than one.
You need a gang of them.
And I think you need somebody. I don't know exactly what the authority is that person needs to convey.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I think somebody like David West would probably be more important than Iguodala. It can't just be somebody with a resume. It's got to be somebody, I think, like with a particular presence, perhaps, or somebody for whatever reason that Morant could like relate to in that way. But I feel like that was the thing I had with the process Sixers.
Mm-hmm.
When they were building that, I'm like, yo, you can't have these young dudes out here out with nobody but themselves. When the Thunder made the trade where they got Jeff Green out to bring in Kendrick Perkins at that time, Kendrick Perkins was only like 28 or something like that. But they needed somebody, like, you just need somebody grown in the room. Now, I don't know what they could have done for Ja. We had Vernon Maxwell on before talking about hanging with Iverson, and he was like, yo, I can't tell him nothing. He got too much money. Like, I can't say nothing to him. But I'm just like, I'm more heartbroken by that story than anything else. Like, I don't need to wag fingers about it.
Yeah, it's sad because, like, it feels so preventable. You know, like it feels like we're in a part of this place where like a lot of players aren't doing this, and it don't feel it feels unnecessary. You know, yeah. And it's sort of that's the thing that's upsetting about it. But going back to the grownups in the room, like the good franchises keep those players. You know, like you said, the Thunder make the trade. Nebraska's like, I didn't make it. Miami always keeps those players. You know,
I mean,
like
they keep the same one.
The guy, right? The player. You know, like they keep them. And like there's a lot, all these, you know, these good franchises, they make the trades. And you're like, why are they getting this old guy who doesn't do anything? It's for that reason. And Memphis, I think it might be too late. You know, it might be too late for them to have made that move. These guys are sort of like, what can you tell Ja right now?
No, they're going to have to break this up in some form or fashion. Like, yeah. That doesn't necessarily mean they have to trade Ja Morant. But I don't think, given to where this is gone, I don't feel like you can keep the same collection of players.
Right.
If you really need to change this. Now, I also say this, and we're hearing different reports about what punishment the league might come down with, because it dawned on everybody, hey, if he was in Colorado with a gun, does that mean he had a gun on a team plane?
Right.
Right. And now all of a sudden we get into the place where the NBA can do something. Now, I've heard people throw a number out of 50 games. I didn't see how they concluded that 50 games was possible. I am not a person that roots for like excessive punishment.
Mm-hmm.
However, in this case, and it's not about punishing him or making it, it's not about making it hurt. It's about making it real.
Yeah.
And I don't know what exactly you have to do to make it real, but for the sake of him, you're going to have to make this very, very real, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the commit, you know how committed you have to be to go out to like do that in Denver, Colorado, to find the strip club in Denver, Colorado, where you and your homeboys could roll through and you could flash. Like that is a dedication to that type of behavior or that type of what you're doing. That's alarming. It ain't like they were playing the Hawks. You know what I'm saying? Like they were playing in Denver, Colorado, and he went out and found some stuff to get into. But yeah, the 50 games, I think Adam Silver came back and said that's not the, you know, it's sort of up to his discretion. But I mean, we're already at the point where this is going to like derail any sort of championship hopes that they have. It seems like.
Oh, that's over.
Yeah, that's, you know, that seems like it's doomed their season. And, you know, of course, there's going to be this Nike pressure that has like a lot of different sides to it and people doing their own different agendas, but they're going to be saying, hey, you got the Kyrie thing. What's up with the Ja Morant thing? Like now can we start doing this? And of course, there's a lot of folks who are doing it for their own sort of anti-Semitic reasons of their own. But there's like this thing of like, now you got this spiral on that. There's a lot of money to be lost. There's a season to be lost. There's games to be lost. Like this thing is about to get really real for him. And then, of course, they're looking into the gun laws and all that stuff. Like, this is a really real, like, next few weeks for Ja Morant.
Yeah, and, like, with the Nike thing as the comparison to Kyrie, what Ja did wasn't offensive.
Mm-hmm.
It was really stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if the line is the Instagram Live video,
nah,
it's just really stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what it comes to. Now, let me ask you this. Like, how old are your kids?
17 and 10.
Okay. Does the 17-year-old do the IG live like that?
No.
That was the thing that got me about Ja, is how much time he spends on IG live. And every now and then you'll go on Instagram and you'll see something and somebody's on live and you'll like not even on purpose hit the button or whatever. And dog, you sit there and you look at that. They ain't doing nothing.
Nothing.
They just want somebody to look at them while they put on their makeup or like whatever it is. And it's like, what are you doing? And that was the thing that got me with Ja, because I saw another Instagram live video. Did you see the one with him on the plane taking bottles?
Yeah. I saw that. Yeah.
That was the one where I'm like, oh, I have a feeling I know what's going on here. But I'm like, yo, you're just sitting on a plane drinking. Why do you think somebody wants to see this? I know people are watching it.
Right.
But why do you think somebody wants to see this?
Yeah. And like, there's no edit button on IG Live. It's up there and it's good to go.
Shout out to Paul Pierce.
Right. Ain't no edit button. That's why it's called live. And that's why we don't do live shows even when we're trained professionals. So, like, do not do a live show when you got the liquor and all that, like just disable the button. Like so much of like, just don't have the button on there. Don't put IG on the personal phone. Like there's just very simple things to do that. But yeah, I saw the one where he had the bottles on the plane and he seemed like he was not all the way there. And like the tequila and the beer together, that's like that's a thing.
Did you see how much tequila it was? Like,
oh yeah.
That's a lot of tequila to consume on one breath. Like, I know athletes is aliens, but damn.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's some. It was insightful to what could possibly be going on. I'll just say that.
There we go.
Informative.
Yeah. Switching gears here. Did you see JJ and Perk on First Take talk about the Jokic situation?
Yes, indeed. Yes, I did.
What do you think about that?
Man, first of all, I love what JJ Redick has done, and we got to save that brother because he's been co-opted. Like you, like with Clay Travis and them be saying like JJ Redick is like my guy. Like we got to bring him back. We got to get him from out from there. I thought there was a good conversation to be had in there somewhere. They just didn't have a good conversation. You know, like I think that there is, you know, Perk I think is making a point about when you have a voting system where it's all a bunch of white guys, they might lean towards the white guy. And I think JJ may not have been sort of ready for that. You know, like you got to be ready for that kind of conversation. And there's a lot of nuance there. They ain't have a lot of nuance. But I mean, when you got 80% of white folks voting for something, there's going to be an inherent bias in there. And it's going to impact the decisions. However, it's hard to make that argument that that's what's going on with Jokic in this season.
Well, so here's where that gets tricky is, and I agree with everything that you said.
Mm-hmm.
It's a macro level observation.
Right.
The problem with this particular sample is we don't have a lot of counterfactual.
Right.
You know, points right. in this distribution. It ain't been but like three white dudes worth a damn in the last 30 years, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough examples to point to demonstrate a trend. Mm-hmm. It's just not there. So, for example, I heard people make the point that I don't remember if it was Perk or somebody else who made this point, but they're like, there's less pressure on the European players to win mm-hmm. championships than it is on the black players. The problem with that, again, is it wasn't until literally now that we had one, let alone two or three European players who, and they specifically white European players, let me be clear, because Giannis was not in this category.
Right.
There's only been two white European players, and they both play right now, that had even gotten into that stratosphere of stardom to where this even becomes a discussion. It never happened before. So I can't say that this is what happens with European players because it's these two dudes, one in his early 20s, one in his mid-20s. I can't point to a trend to say.
Well, I think we sort of like gave Dirk a real hard time.
We don't. You know, that's what I'm saying. We did give, that's
we,
my point.
We gave Dirk a real hard time.
Yeah, Dirk's the other one. And we gave
by the time, hell. By the time that championship run, 2011, I think they lost game one to the Blazers and everybody was like, oh, this is done. And everybody and like nobody thought that dude was winning that champ. Like that was probably the most rehabilitative championship that I can think of.
Nobody's championship means more than his because his championship legitimately put him in top 20 all time discussions. Right. And I know that may sound crazy to a lot of you, but like all the advanced number stuff actually checks out in this direction. Right. Like we actually underrated Dirk Nowitzki his entire career. When you go back and realize that he actually had them teams on his back. Like, we're talking about Jokic not playing with an all-star. The only all-star Dirk played with was 1 year of Josh Howard. That was it. And that year, they had the best record in the league. You know, but you're right. We absolutely gave it to Dirk. And Dirk, they blew the lead in 06, right?
Mm-hmm.
Up 2-0 and up late in game three.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Blew that. 07, they lost in the first round. 08, they lost in the first round to the Hornets, and David West walked up on him and tapped his jaw. 09 was when he got dirt. You remember when he got dirt? He had that little situation.
Right.
With what's her name? You know what I'm saying? He messed around.
Some personal issues. Right.
Yeah, he got dirt. Right. He balled those playoffs. They lost. We gave him hell. They lost in 2010. I don't even remember to who at this point. But you're right. They lost that first game to the Blazers. and we gave him absolute outright hell. But I also, I don't think we truly view Dirk as a superstar in the ways that we view Luka and Jokic as superstars.
Well, I think we didn't think of him as a superstar because we literally wrote him like they lost that they lost that first round playoff and said, and it was Dirk is never winning a championship ever again. We didn't talk about him like we talk about Jokic because it was like it's over for Dirk. No more. We're never going to believe Dirk is going to win a championship until he's actually holding that trophy and winning that championship. Every round in that playoffs, it was like, when are the Mavs going to lose? Remember they beat Kobe. They played Kobe and they were up 3-0 on that Lakers team. And we were like, when are the Lakers coming back? You know, saying like that was the thing. Nobody was even considering Dirk in that. Like he had been cut off of superstar level in a way that we had not seen somebody get banished from superstar level. So like if Dirk is our only metric for how we treat European players, like I think we're pretty, you know, hard on those guys too.
Yeah. Now with Jokic, you got to where I get to, which is I don't think y'all understand what's going on here with this dude. The argument, because I don't think he's the best player in the NBA.
Right.
And the reason I don't think he's the best player in the NBA is, to me, the best player in the NBA can also control a game on defense.
Right.
And that is something even if we say he's a better defender than it seems to be, even if we say that he is a capable defender, he can't control like we've seen Giannis be able to control it. Like we saw at a different point, Kawhi Leonard be able to control it. Like at his best, LeBron James could control a game defensively. And that damn vortex in Philadelphia, Joel Embiid,
Can
just outright control the game. That's the thing that Jokic can't do. And I do wonder if for some people, and I think you saw this with your favorite person in the world, Steph Curry. If you are not in a position where people see you as the guy that can
our favorite person in the world.
The other end, it's hard to.
Right.
You know, see the thing, you know this. I am actually a big Steph fan, but I readily acknowledge I am one of those, wow, maybe he really is that good. I have had all these various steps of, nah, but I mean, not that I didn't think he was great, but it's like, I think y'all dorks is going a little too. Nope. There he is. Right there. Oh, he is. He is completely controlling the game from 30 feet away. Oh, my bad. Forgive me. Didn't know that was possible. Sorry. But that's the holdup with Steph.
Right.
Like, why for me, at least, it was so hard to be like, at any point, Steph greater than LeBron is that other end.
Right.
And I think that that's part of what gets Jokic is that part.
I think. Yeah, I agree. I think that's what makes it difficult to like when you, because the people who vote for these things think of like these things in the historical context. And for me, it's just hard on the large like level to be like, this guy's going to win 3 straight MVPs. And he was never definitively the best player in the league at any point in those 3 years. You know, even though he's doing all this great stuff, like you can, you know, when you look at Bird and the you know, him winning, you could say, well, man, like it's hard to argue that he was not the best guy at least one of those years. You know, with Jokic, it's like, man, I still can't put him above Embiid or Giannis, you know, as the best player. I know we can get in the semantics of most valuable and but like at some point you also talked about who's the best player. And I don't really feel confident that he's the best player. And which I think that's what you kind of is important if you're going to have this like once in a lifetime stat of 3 straight MVPs.
Right, but here's the counterpoint. Does it matter if you're the best player if you play better than everybody else?
Well, there's that too.
You know, because I think part of what gets us here is when I think about like that defense end, that's not about the 82 game sample.
Right.
It's about these 7 game samples that you have to get through, right?
Right.
And it's fair to raise a question about how good you are at doing this other thing. Like I talk about with football, part of the problem with the advanced metrics is September and January are completely different things. They're different outside. Right. They're different versus who you're going to play. Like, it's all these different things. How much do those things really matter? Like, once you get down to the nitty gritty. And I think it's fair for people to ask that question about Jokic. However, I raise this point. I'm curious what you think. The basketball world historically has kind of settled on the idea that Bill Russell was a better player than Wilt Chamberlain. I am not certain that is the case, but that has been settled upon.
Right.
Bill Russell was kind of a two-way player, right? Like what they'll tell you is that he ran the offense from the high post, so ignore those really low shooting percentages and all of that stuff. But they weren't going out there being like, hey, Russ, we need a bucket.
You don't go
get
50.
That for us, right? Right. But there's something I think, not just aesthetically, but also almost like morally for us in our minds, that if we don't think of you as this great defensive player, we just can't do it, right? Just because it is defense. Again, Steph Curry wound up in that same place. And then we get to the weird race thing. And I'm curious your observations on this, because, you know, we both had our various exposures to white people when it comes to talking about various things, including basketball. I find that nobody is harder on white basketball players than white people. They got there's a low white self-esteem, it seems, when it comes to basketball.
And rappers, they're the same way with rappers, too.
Yep. Yeah. They cut them off at the knees.
Right.
Unless for whatever reason, that white rapper or that white basketball player demonstrates that he belongs, in which case they go way too far. Right? Uh-huh. It gets all the way to a whole nother place once they cross over a certain threshold. And I don't really keep up. Like, I haven't checked the public Twitter timeline in over a year. So there's a lot of the discourse around Jokic that I don't see. But I do fully understand, after I've gotten a little more familiar with what's going on in the discourse, why is black people popping up being like, yo, so what y'all doing? Right. Like, if you ever said definitively you would not vote for Giannis for a third MVP, and now you're saying you are going to do it for Jokic. That's going to make people look at you. And I think that was my thing with JJ. And I've been in one of these situations on TV with JJ. Because when I was doing that show for HBO with Bob Costas, I had done the first episode of Game Theory about Duke basketball, and Bob wanted me to get on to talk to JJ about it. And I don't know how much of the actual episode JJ saw, but he came out hot at the top. Hot. And was like, if you were implying at all that Coach is anti-black, that is absolutely asinine. And I laughed it off, but I'm like, asinine, huh? JJ doesn't take it well if there is an allegation of racism that he believes is unfounded, which, okay, I see how you feel that way, right? Like, I'm not, okay, I get it. But what he said in response that jumped out to me, and it was the same thing when I was in front of him, is the absolutism.
Right.
There is no way that's oh, there's always a way, buddy. Right. It might not be happening right now, but don't you tell me there ain't no way.
If there is 80% of white folks in anything, there is going to be bias, you know, bias based on race. And Perk did not say racism. Perk did not say racist. He was saying exactly that. You got 80% of white folks making a decision. They are going to, and in the history of the world, when you got 80% of white folks making a decision, they will lean towards other white folks. Like, that is just an absolute fact. Like, that is something that we cannot deny. And like, there is a complete middle ground between Perk making that statement and anything about racism or anything like that. That's just the fact of the matter. That's, you know, how white supremacy works and has always worked traditionally. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with Perk saying that, because, like, however it manifests, it is manifesting, you know, in a way that, you know, it's just going to be there. There's just no way around it.
But also, to be fair to white folks on that one, if the voting bloc was 80% black, there would probably be, and it comes, it's rooted in something different, right? Like, there, I'm not saying everybody the same. Nah, there's wrinkles, right? We're all special snowflakes. It goes a little different across the board. But no, that's possibly going to be the case. And the other part of it is, Kendrick Perkins has been covered by NBA media.
Yeah.
He knows how they do or do not get down, regardless of how they vote or whatever it is. He knows how they do or do not get down. Now, what the voters have on their side is a voting track record that don't really got no white folks in it for the last 40 years.
Right.
The counterpoint is, it's worth noting that there have been two white MVPs since Larry Bird retired. Between them, they have four going on five MVPs and no trips to the NBA Finals.
Right.
That's a bit anomalous. We would have to agree there. When you go through and do the list of NBA MVPs who have never made the finals, I can only count from here Derrick Rose, James Harden, Steve Nash, and Nikola Jokic. Those are the ones I got. Right.
And even Harden, I mean, even Harden kind of, I mean, he was in the finals.
Yes. You know, he got closer right. than Jokic ever has. He got closer than Nash ever has. He got closer than Derrick Rose ever has. Right. So, yeah, you got to understand why it is that people would look at it funny. Mm-hmm. And these are people that you and I both disagree with about Jokic himself and how good he is and everything else. But come on, man, you can't, no matter who you are. I would not be so confident. Like, this is an extreme example, but I think you'll feel where I'm coming from. I will never confidently say in the face of an accusation, my friend or anybody else did not commit a sexual assault.
Right.
Unless you give me some data, and I got lived experience of, I never thought that person would do such a thing.
Right.
And then they did it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Many times, in fact, in this example, I'm not getting out here saying that you can't. What that is too prevalent and it's too widespread, and it's not something people brag about necessarily for me to ever confidently be like, oh, no, not them, not him.
Right.
Nah. I'm going to be like, oh, tell me more. And then I might be like, I don't know about that one.
Right.
And on the thing about the voters, I think the response that I would have liked to have heard was more of a, I can see why you might say that,
right.
but I don't think that's what's happening here, opposed to you're being ridiculous right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think what JJ might have heard is that white voters are taking middling white players and making them MVPs. That's not how that works. That's never how that works. You can't tell me that when a white guy and two black guys are neck and neck, right, for this MVP decision, that we're not going to lean towards a guy who looks like us a little bit further. You know, like it pushed them right a little bit above them when they're neck and neck. I mean, that when you look at the people who get hired for different things, look at the, you know what I'm saying? Like there is a world where mediocre white folks get lifted up to wherever they get lifted up. But there's also probably a more realistic world in which whenever we are right here in a photo finish, I'm going to pick the person that looks a little bit like me. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, I think the Jokic thing, if we go back to the beginning, I think the Jokic thing is also, because like, I think Jokic was great analytically before we saw the greatness, you know? And I think that there were a lot of white dudes who, because of how the analytic community is built, or like the makeup of it, were championing Jokic a couple of years before it just looked like Jokic was one of the best players in the league. And so what happens is you have a bunch of white guys saying, this white guy is really great. And a bunch of folks who are outside that community who, you know, a bunch of black folks who are looking at it like, I don't really see that, you know? And then that, you know, then you have this collision of these communities that, you know, and now we're at the point where it's at the MVP level. And we have this community that's been backing him for years, and this community that for years has been like, I don't really see that as compared to these other dudes. And now we're sort of at that fever pitch. This guy's about to maybe get his third MVP.
I just want to say this to everybody who's like, I'll go too far on this Jokic thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel you. I understand where you're coming from. I see why you might say that. Sir, this man is shooting 63% from the floor.
Right.
The floor. He's shooting 40 from three, 67 from two. He's shooting 40% from three and 63 from the floor. And normally when somebody's shooting 63 from the floor, it's like DeAndre Jordan.
Right. Yeah.
You know, all I do is get the ball right next to the rim and I dunk it.
Five times a game. I take five shots a game and I dunk for four of them.
Dude, this is like, I watch clips of Jokic. I check the stats on Jokic. You'd be like, oh, it's the advanced numbers. The regular numbers
the
say
regular
24,
numbers,
12,
yes.
and 10.
The regular numbers have caught up with the analytic numbers, and you can't deny any part of it at this point.
You say they caught up. The first MVP year, 26, 11, and 8. The next one, 27, 14, and 8. This year, 24 and a half, 12, and 10. They've been there.
Like, they've been there, right?
People just literally aren't paying any attention. That's the only thing I can grasp, man. And he's out there now, like, y'all can't do shit with me.
Nothing.
I'm gonna put my back on you, and there's nothing you can do. Like, he ain't perfect. I mean, Embiid gave him that 40 something that other day.
Right. That's the thing that's hard for me. That's the thing that's like, I keep going back. Embiid busted his ass when they played 1-on-1. That's got to count for a few votes.
It does count, but you know what? He could do the same. Like, this just happens sometimes. Right. Yep. You know what I mean? Like this is the way it goes from time to time. But yeah, if you ask me, who do I want to go win this one game? I'm torn, in spite of the fact that I have no doubt who's my MVP guy this year. That's no question. Is Jokic. I want to switch gears right fast because we actually are up on the time. I'm afraid that we're going to stumble on something that may take too long. Do you think that we can talk about the Chris Rock special in 10 minutes?
Let's do it.
Okay. My first thought, A, it just wasn't very good. Right?
Right.
Two, I got a different eye for these things now that I do game theory. I know what it looks like when somebody's telling a joke they don't believe in. You watch me on game theory, you can tell. Yeah, he don't really believe in that one, right? He had a lot of jokes that felt like he didn't believe in him. He looked like a dude that was trying to figure out a way to be edgy but not get in trouble, hence the whole abortion routine, right? Like, he was trying to figure out how to thread that needle. Four, and I say this as somebody who saw him live last May after the Oscars, I think that there's a trauma that he endured from that incident that he still hasn't gotten over. Like, he looks unsure of himself on stage. Right. He didn't have any of the confidence up there that he used to have. And number five, and this is a big one. If Will Smith had to go see him over a G.I. Jane joke, what he got to go do now? Because that man, like, I couldn't tell, like, who you mad at? The dude that hit you or not?
Right. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, man. He's just, I think that this special was probably the most important, not maybe not important, but like, it's obviously going to be the most watched comedy special probably, or most anticipated, most talked about comedy special we probably will ever have, right? And the guy just could not meet the moment. I think that's what it was. He just couldn't meet the moment. Like, he knew that everybody was going to watch this thing. He wanted to do live. He wanted to do all this stuff. And like, he's clearly has not done whatever kind of work he needs to do to get over that, to make jokes about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's still a really, really raw thing for him. And so he, you know, I think if you're going to make a joke about something, you got to be kind of settled about it in your mind and your spirit to like find the comedy in it. He hadn't found it yet. You know, it's been 11 months. He got smacked on national TV. And I would imagine that's like a physically traumatizing thing. This big ass dude slapped the hell out of him. And he might've thought that he was like in real physical danger there, and like,
and
nobody
you weren't
did
allowed
anything.
To do anything. Can't Even do if anything. You were going to step up and get your ass kicked, you could do something.
Right. Couldn't do anything. There was no security. There was no help. You out there on national TV, which would probably felt like his life was in danger. And he had not had that settled in his spirit enough to go out there and make jokes about it. And he tried to do it. And like, I think, you know, people mess up jokes. Like, you know, people mess up jokes all the time. He wanted to go live. He wanted to do this thing, and I messed up the joke. But I think there's something telling. I think in that moment, in that biggest moment of your life, comedically, to have to say to the crowd, I messed up that joke. You know, I think that that's probably going to do as much damage for him going forward. You know?
Yeah, see, I think that I messed up the joke, not as much. And you said it earlier, even as trained professionals, we don't do this live. And he did that live. Like, I think, like, as somebody who be trying to do that now, it can happen, right? Like, when I saw him in May, he messed up a joke. Like, I don't think that part's going to land with him. What got me, though, was just how obviously angry he was when he walked out. And you're right. He still isn't at a point where he could joke about it, but he took $40 million thinking that he would get to a point where he could joke about it. And this is the part that gets me about him not being able to joke about it. Man, that would have been a layup. Like, you think about this for a second. What stories are funnier? We do it on this show all the time. Than when people talk about how they either got beat up, hooped up, juked out their jocks, whatever it is. It is the easiest money. Somehow, Cat Williams was able to be more self-deprecating after getting beat up by a teenager.
By an eighth grader.
Right. Then Will Smith was able to be about this. I mean, not Will Smith. Chris Rock was able to be about this. And I really think he just thought, I'll be fine by the time it comes around.
Right.
And then when it came around, like, those weren't even jokes.
Yeah, he was just cussing at folks. He was just cussing at folks for 30 seconds and cussing at Jada. Like, what, you know, like that's is not settled with him, you know. Right. And I think the interesting juxtaposition is Marlon Wayans just released a stand-up special that's fully dedicated to the slap. It's an hour about of him talking about the slap. And he, it's easier. I mean, it's there are some, you know, it's not the best. It's a decent special. I think it's pretty fun. There's some like really laugh out loud moments, but it's obviously easier for him to find the humor in it and like make the jokes and be even self-deprecating to himself in a way that like you could do. But Chris Rock was trying to self-deprecate a little bit by being like, I'm a small guy, but also just being like, you know, insulting to these folks when there was like comedy in what happened. And he just could not find it. He just can't find it.
So I'll tell you, give you a little interesting insight on him. When I was getting ready to do Game Theory, I hit up Neil Brennan to chat with him about some stuff. We were buddies of sorts. And he asked me something. He was like, so how do you think, what have you learned from your persona on ESPN coming into this? And I was like, persona? Oh, coming in hot, Neil.
Right.
But his point was a good one. He said, I've been working with Kevin Hart, and I've learned that 80% of doing this job is being in a good mood and looking like you're in a good mood. And Neil talks about how he wears a watch that shocks him to remind him to smile. He says, he says, guys like me and him have what they call writer face, right? And he said specifically about Chris Rock. He was like, Chris Rock been telling white folks about themselves all these years with a big old smile on his face. Mm-hmm. And when you watch a Chris Rock stand-up special, no matter what he's talking about, he's always got this big smile on his face, which, by the way, is really hard to keep up for now. It's hard to hit all these other notes that you want to do, but he's always got a smile on his face. Not for that. He couldn't smile about anything. Like, I thought that he would at least, like, I felt like the way to walk into that is, next thing I know, like, talk about seeing stars, right? Like, the birds are flying over your head, like you're a cartoon. And then I looked at Will Smith, and I thought to myself, and all of that. It was none of it. Like, there was no, like, kind of recreation. Like, you got to lean in on, I got my ass whooped. And he would, it was weird because he could acknowledge he got his ass whooped. And but he just hadn't been there.
The juxtaposition I would encourage people to look up is when Jamie Foxx talked about when LL Cool J knocked him out on Any Given Sunday, right?
Yeah.
And he talks about LL Cool J came and, you know, he was making fun of LL Cool J, licking the lips and all that stuff. But he said, LL Cool J knocked me into another movie. I was in a Big Green Mile when I woke up. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just, like, there is a way to self-deprecate and do that. But the guy just not, I mean, it was a damage to his ego because Chris Rock has spent so much of his time trying to get into this upper echelon of Hollywood, of like acceptance and all that stuff. And he sat there in that room and looked across to a dude who got infinitely more power than him. And Chris Rock will never have that power. A black dude who got that kind of power. Like, you will never have, like, how many times is Chris Rock going to look at his sort of celebrity mortality when somebody can slap the hell out of you on national TV and go sit in their chair and not be asked to leave? And you are like, that is something that is going to be embedded in his mind for the rest of his career.
Well, the other part too, if you watch the rest of the special, it put him in a position that he clearly has no interest in being in.
Mm-hmm.
He became the victim.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no, and I mean, to be fair, I mean, he may not, you know, victim mentality, all that is more complicated, but he was the victim of an assault. Like, there's no real other way to put it. He couldn't do anything about it. He can't even laugh about it at this point. I just felt like the things he said in that special, that should have been an interview.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he should have done an interview a month before the special or leading into it or something where he said all these things and got it out. And then you can get into the special and give us actual comedy.
Right.
And that isn't what we got. Like, if you're going to, like, give me, like, run through your thoughts and everything else about it, give me Gerard Carmichael. He's better at that.
Yeah. Or format it, you know, like Neil Brennan himself has formatted comedy specials around trauma in a way that's really interesting, that's really honest with himself. And I just don't think Chris Rock I don't know if it's, I'll put the yet there, but I'm not sure if he and the brand of comedy he has, because his comedy is authoritative. His comedy is, I know exactly what I'm talking about. I know, you know, I have this insight. I'm the authority on all this stuff, on race and everything like that. And this puts him in a position to not be that authoritative voice. And he has to figure out a different way to do it. But that's not how he's done comedy for the last 30 years.
Yeah, no, it was an interesting one. The only part of, like, when you were like, oh man, he's had a year to get over this and he still hadn't. I'm like, yo, a year ain't that long, dog. Right? Well, he messed up the joke. I was like, nah, people mess up jokes. Like, that's just, you've never seen a 1 hour live comedy special before, you know? None of us.
The thing, I mean, but even though you mess up jokes, like, that was probably the most important 5 minutes of his career from his standpoint.
Oh,
standpoint.
You're right. But hey,
I know he laid up in that bed all night and looked at the ceiling and was like, I can't believe I messed up that joke.
I know, you just wanted to clown him.
I do want to clown him. I do want to clown Chris Rock. I've been a little bit polite about Chris Rock. Chris Rock got some real deep-seated issues about the way he treats black women that I've always had a problem with. And I think that, like, I've tried to put personal bias aside in terms of how I feel about the slap itself, because that brother has some real, real issues with black women. I think that manifests himself in the way that he goes into a crowd at the Oscars and points out the one black woman when you're ad-libbing and points out the one black woman and talks about her hair in that group, in that space. And that even in this moment where Will slaps you, right? You say that everybody else is called Will, you know.
But you don't.
But you don't. But you call Jada that word.
In her hometown.
When Jada did not do anything to that brother this whole time. Like, we can talk about, you can do all that body language reading and say that she mind control Will to go up there. Jada has done nothing in this whole instance, and you have made her a focal point to something that where another man went up there and slapped you. And that is sort of a continuation of Chris Rock's really, really, like, go watch the Chris Rock show on HBO Max and watch how he interviews all of these black women, including Jada Pinkett Smith, where he concludes the interview by giving her an award for not mentioning Will Smith in the interview. Right. And so that's 20 years ago. Right. And so you go on there and you call this woman out her name for not doing nothing. Yeah, I'm going to make fun of you for messing up your joke.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's the least I can do.
Yeah, that's a fair point. You can make fun of him. You was just wrong too. I was just like, oh, he spent a year. Hey, man, that's just what it goes. Like, it was he did not do himself any favors.
Right.
I would say that. I think he messed up on such a macro that the little micro stuff is just kind of. But in the end, what was more worrisome to me, and I work with comics now, so I talk to them about it. It was mid.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
It was mid. I saw him in May and it was mid. Mm-hmm. Right. And my thought was, okay, he just got to get warmed up.
Right.
No, he may just be at a midpoint in his career right now. Perhaps not a permanent one. Perhaps he's got to tear down his whole act and build it back up. But it was more disappointing to me than anything else that it was mid. Not even like, oh, I was so ready for what he had to say about Will. I didn't care that much about that. Like, I would have liked it, but that, right. If you told me it was a Chris Rock special, and I was going to watch the Chris Rock special.
Right.
I didn't need to anticipate it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just not ready. He's just not ready yet. He's got some stuff he got to work on to get himself in a different space. So.
Yeah. But hey, man, that's David Dennis Jr. Junior Dennis in the house. Check him out on Around the Horn. Check him out on Debatable. Check him out on Anscape. Check out his book, The Movement Made Us. Available where you get books, my man. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you, my brother.
No problem, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Thanks for joining us on YouTube. We do this 3 times a week. Adi Khan, Parker Owens, and Dan Stancic handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.